bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Tuesday, December 19th, 2023, and this week's episode, UFC 296 and the amazing triumph of Leon Edwards. We'll be talking about UFC 296, the final major MMA event of the year, and what is next for the winners, some announcements for Miami, and everything in between. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I am joined by my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Aloha, Double G. I have returned from the island of Oahu, and I'm a little sick, but I didn't get sick till the end, so that's all that matters. Happy to be back. How was your week?
You brought back some seashells and some, you know, what
and
is
some,
it?
Some Hawaiian...
and some mucus, right?
Hawaiian... some island germs, yes, sir. How was Vegas?
epic. If you guys follow my socials, you know, it was epic. Just World MMA Awards, Karate Combat, everything UFC. Quite an exciting night of fights overall. So it was just really great. I remember getting through Saturday and we're just rolling along and it's like, this is just a great night of fights. And, you know, you're just always glad to be a part of it. You're glad to be somebody who is in some way a little part of something that, you know, is so exciting to so many people. So, yeah, it was good. It was good.
Yeah, right on, man. That's awesome.
I mean, let's start from the top. We have quite a bit to start kind of chewing through. The main event, Leon Edwards taking on Colby Covington. One of the things that was just so much, so much fun about this fight is that, you know, you feel like Colby Covington has that weapon. And I said it on last week's show, I don't know if you caught it, but I felt like the wrestling of Colby is the best weapon on either side, right? As slick as Leon is on the feet, that ability to just take you off of it and just stifle everything with the wrestling of Colby, I mean, you know, that's just the thing that Leon has to overcome. And really, it was never a factor in the fight. I feel like you could count the amount of times Colby actually shot on your fingers. Yeah. And the result was that Leon Edwards' speed, technicality, a lot of switch stances, which Colby said did frustrate him after the fight, but just speed and precision, he just kind of picked Colby apart for the better part of 15 minutes. Colby never really got significant damage going for him. He never really got anything really effective. Never really had a long exchange where he was even really tying up Leon against the fence. Leon was just so brilliantly prepared for everything. Anytime even Colby did briefly get him down, couldn't hold Leon and just got reversed and they're back on the feet. And it's like, this is a masterclass really from Mr. Edwards. Only he knows, but I'd put it down to a multitude of factors. The layoff, the sheer brilliance of Leon, maybe a little bit of the mental stuff. Obviously, Colby had a lot of pressure going in. He was definitely the, quote, bad guy of the week, even though the fans, I think, fans wanted a little bit of carnage. I'd be lying if I said I didn't hear a little bit of support for Colby at the beginning of the fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But really, he was the one who had to deliver. He was the one, lay off the pressure, last title shot, all this. And I think you put all that together and then you're in there with a brilliant champion like Leon. You get the result you did. Beautiful performance. Sets him up for a big year, but what are your thoughts on the fight?
Yeah, it was a great performance by Leon Edwards. And the ring rust was evident with Colby Covington. From the start, he didn't look like himself physically. You know, just a little bit floppy, a little soft. And then performance-wise, not sharp at all with the striking, which he always used in a limited fashion or a very specific fashion just to set up his takedowns, you know, punch, punch, drop down, push against the cage, that stuff. That was like a rinse and repeat for him. And he didn't do any of that. Striking looked slow, sloppy, reflexes, not what they used to be. And is it an age thing or is it a ring rust thing or a little bit of both? Or, you know, when you're at a certain place where you just feel like you only need to fight for the belt. I, you know, we've seen it with, like, you know, McGregor and some other folks, where when you put yourself in that position where you stop just taking all oncomers, it does affect the game a little bit. You're just less sharp, less of that killer instinct. So many factors going into the poor performance of Colby Covington. Leon Edwards, on the contrary, looked perfectly together, perfectly composed, never got distracted. There were so many opportunities, especially when he insisted on taking down Colby Covington unnecessarily, where he could have stood up and laughed, pointed a finger at him, done something just to show him, like, yeah, I got you. But he never did. He stayed so composed. I was really impressed with that. And further impressed with his admissions and the interview with Joe Rogan, you know, because everyone saw the press conference. All the fighters were chiming in on Twitter, X, whatever, like that was a line that, you know, that was crossed, that was so low. Everyone was rooting for Leon Edwards to beat up Colby Covington. It was, you know, worse than anything Connor has said before to Khabib or anybody else. This one was crossing like double lines, right? Double yellow lines. So him admitting that it did affect him and that he had to just get that, all those hard feelings out with a good cry, like, that takes guts to say that, man, because we've all been there, man or woman, where you get so mad about something that someone's done and you're not crying from sadness. It's just almost rage and frustration. So I appreciated his admission. I appreciated how composed he was in spite of all that happening. Very easy to get carried away with wanting to, you know, stick your finger in Colby's face every time you get one over on him in the cage, but he didn't. But one thing I didn't like at the end was when Colby did finally start to look at the end of round five like old school Colby, no disrespect to Colby, and he was holding Leon Edwards down for a while at the end, right? That's how the fight ended. I didn't understand the commentary between Rogan and DC, mostly Rogan saying like, oh man, this is terrible for Leon Edwards, and, you know, this is going to be like demoralizing, and like, yeah, you don't want to end the fight on the bottom, but who cares? This was just almost a gimme. Like, it was almost like Leon Edwards just taking the night off at the end. So didn't like that. Didn't agree with that. But otherwise, great moment for Leon Edwards. For whatever reasons, Colby took that much time away from the cage. If he's serious about getting the belt or staying in the limelight, I hope that he does just start getting back on that conveyor belt and fighting whoever's willing to fight him. Because I think he can return to form. It's just, it wasn't going to happen with the first fight. And your return fight for a title after 2 years, only GSP can do something miraculous like win the belt. It wasn't going to work for Colby.
Yeah, fair enough. I think when I listened to Leon, and Leon said, like, you know, Colby did a lot of the same things that he's done in his last few fights, and we just really drilled the life out of him, right, to prepare for it. I thought that was very telling. I thought that Leon kind of shared the Colby Covington playbook for, you know, one, just out of the, I don't want to say hate, because Leon is a very chill guy, but certainly the animosity. He was like, yeah, you did what, you know, you always do, and it was this, and it was that, and it was that. So I think there is an adjustment to be made for Colby. Once again, if you watch, like, those first couple rounds back, Leon is so seamlessly lead leg, right leg, and Colby was like, I kept, you know, he said, I went out there expecting to see that left leg out there, and he had the right leg, and it just threw me off. And Leon said that Colby tends to actually always go for his takedowns on the same side. And I think that's very telling, right? But is it over for Colby? You know what? Things happen, right? If Charles Oliveira and guys like Michael Bisping get back to the title, I'm not going to count out a guy like Colby Covington getting back to a level like that and potentially making something happen. That being said, he's out of the picture for the near future for a while now. And I think that the state of the welterweight division is more, besides his performance, is the biggest part of that. Going into it in, what was it, April, May, Dana White, Bilal got the next title shot. He stepped up, short notice. You know, routed Gilbert Burns 25 minutes. Bilal's getting the next title shot. Going in, probably Bilal. Bilal's the backup. Bilal next title shot on Saturday night. You know, Dana White asks, well, you know, we're assuming Bilal's got the next title shot. Dana White right there in front of all of us. I don't know, man. Yeah, if I'm
yeah,
Bilal
that was
Muhammad,
shocking, right? Wasn't that yeah, shocking that he was like, oh, you know, I don't want to say it. I'm like, really? You brought him in as the backup. He's the guy that should have gotten the title shot. Colby just had a terrible performance, and you're still on the fence? I don't get it.
I mean, look, meritocracy isn't everything. If it were, a lot of different guys would get title shots every now and then. We know this. On meritocracy, there is no doubt whatsoever that it should be Bilal Muhammad. Let's talk about some things on the table now. So several champions are already booked, including major ones, between now and UFC 300, which was announced for April 13th. Dana White says at the press conference, and I ask him, you know, they did the big seasonal thing, and I was like, you know, Dana, I think a bunch of people were kind of expecting you to drop that bomb right there at the end of that Friday's festivities. And he says, we wanted to see some things play out first. In my mind, potentially, they are looking at Islam fighting for the welterweight title. Now, I don't know that it necessarily made a difference who won, Colby or Leon, but when I hear that and I see this and I hear the comments about Bilal, it makes me think that Leon versus Islam is a fight they're targeting for 300. Now, is that the, quote, main event? I'm not sure. It's kind of hard to imagine a title, you know, a champ versus champ fight not being the main event. But obviously, we discussed this. The rumor of Conor McGregor at the top of a UFC 300 is always going to be out there, right? So, once again, if you're Bilal Muhammad, if you're a fan of, you know, putting in the work and getting rewarded for it, you are a lot of adjectives that are not positive about hearing someone else get the title shot before Bilal. That being said, we know going in, the UFC machine works the way the UFC machine does. It's putting on the biggest fights possible, even if, you know, the next man up isn't necessarily always that guy. So I'll say it right now. I'm sorry, Bilal. I think the UFC is going to go with Islam Makhachev. What about you?
I think so too, man, because there was no better moment to say it's Bilal. You know, when it was when Edwards beat Usman the second time, didn't Dana White just pretty much say it's going to be Colby right off the bat?
Yep.
So, yeah, why wouldn't you just say it's Bilal? Yeah, because of Islam. And that sucks so bad for Bilal. But we cannot deny that it is a more exciting fight, Leon versus Islam. It is a more exciting fight, but there's time. I feel like Islam needs to or should want to, you know, prepare himself for the bigger weight class. Maybe, I don't know, Volk didn't need time, so maybe Islam doesn't need time either. But I feel bad for Bilal, because if he doesn't get it now, he's probably never going to get it. That's got to be a really disappointing reality, especially coming into the holidays.
I mean, look, only time will tell. Obviously, crazy things happen all the time. People aren't, you know, always ready to go. Injuries happen in camp. Bilal is right there. But, you know, tough news to hear, to kind of be a victim of the calendar, so to speak. They want a huge fight, and they go with that one. I'm going to just put wait and see, but the context clues seem to hint that it is Islam against the champion, right? I think that's not unfair to say.
Yeah.
Talking about the co-main event, Alexandre Pantoja against Brandon Royval. You know what? Pantoja, I saw this. It's like, you know, he doesn't have that that chillness for everything else going in. Or like that extravagance, like I've heard like the presence, like Brandon Moreno had a presence, Davison, and that Pantoja's just so chill. I mean, Pantoja just went out there and reminded everybody why he's the best 25er. And just Brandon Royval, my biggest notes, he just scrapped. He just clawed and scrapped the whole night. He kept trying to make things happen. He kept trying, he just never accepted positions. And then Pantoja just kept coming at him, kept, you know, powering through for the takedowns, kept controlling Brandon on the ground. Early part of the fight, obviously, you know, they're trading on the feet a bit. All of it came together. I thought that Pantoja was looking tired in that second half of the fight. Pantoja just kept getting it done, just kept answering the call, dig deep, and gets that fight down again and wins more time, kills more clock, gets the win. What were your thoughts?
You know, I was surprised that Royval had such little success with Pantoja, considering his advantage with arm reach, arm length. But I think the issue is that he never adjusted, is that he just isn't, like, if you have limbs that long, you have to be fast too, because you're getting your punch out further than your opponent, but it's also going to take you longer to bring your hand back to your face for defense. And so he's shooting out a punch, and Pantoja was just faster with the shorter arms and faster feet. So Royval was throwing out these long punches. Pantoja was just jumping in there and capitalizing on those moments in between the release and the retraction. So, and that was pretty much the whole fight when he, you know, he was doing that when he wasn't holding him against the cage or holding him on the ground. So it looked like easy work for Pantoja. I think Royval was just in over his head, didn't adjust in ways that, you know, in effective ways or at all. And maybe it was the game plan too. It just wasn't able to rise to the occasion. So it was very impressive for me to see Pantoja with those dead, just dead eyes. And no matter what happened, he just like looks like a zombie almost, you know. He doesn't get deterred, and he was able to just do what he needed to do to secure the win. So good win for Pantoja. I think it puts Royval back down at the end of the short list. So it's still a short list. But it's just one of those things where he was the next guy up, but I don't think he was good enough to beat Pantoja, and we saw why.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things. Royval is an awesome contender and everything else. I think, though, when you look at Pantoja's sheer resume,
yeah,
I mean, when you talk about, oh, well, who are the top flyweights, and you're like, well, you know, Brandon Moreno, beat him 3 times. You know, who else? Manel Kopp beat him. Brandon Royval went in, had beaten him. Kai Car France on The Ultimate Fighter beat him. I mean, this guy, literally, he's not only beaten most of these top guys, he's lapping the field now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's freaking still looks like he's at the top of the game, not slowing down. So I think you just got to give credit to the kind of run Pantoja is on. You know, this is a guy who, the way he's going right now, would love to see him against the Demetrius Johnsons, Henry Cejudos, if we were in a slightly different era. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's just clearly on a special run. And, you know, look, so we have the fight, Brandon Moreno, Amir Albazi. It's kind of like your favorite ice cream, you know, even if you know what you're getting, it's still always good. If we were to get freaking Pantoja Moreno 4, I know with the expanded growth into Mexico, that isn't a bad fight to have if you're UFC. That being said, you know, for me, when you get to a point like Pantoja has, I always feel more strongly, I want to see how far he can take it. And the best way to prove that is by beating someone new. And in that way, I would like to see an Amir Albazi fight for Pantoja, just so Pantoja could say, like, well, I've beaten all of them.
Yeah.
If Kai Kara France works his way back up, wouldn't hate it either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So those are the things I want to see. Obviously, Manel is also right there. And if you tell me they go Manel, let's wait and see. I'm sure if Moreno wins, they would consider Manel Pantoja again. If Amir wins, they might go Manel Kopp, Kai Kara France, rebook that with their whole little beef they had with Adesanya in the presser a couple months ago. And that's a fun scenario. But for my money, they're waiting to see if Albazi wins. If not, they'll consider Moreno as opposed to Manel or someone else.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, and for me, interchangeable, really not. I don't say it disrespectfully, but Manel, Albazi, like, you know, either one's fine. Just keep, you know, I like me that conveyor belt. So just keep that conveyor belt rolling.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I think that it just, it's just one of those timing. And then, you know, Pantoja, two big fights in 2023. I know there's probably more hype for a guy like Leon and Islam, but certainly fighter of the year. Kind of a year, fight of the year too, really. Brandon Moreno, you know, he has two, he's up for two big awards if you ask all the reporters. So, you know, full respect.
Yeah.
Talking about some of the marquee action, the big cat, Shavkat Rakhmonov, taking on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. This was one of those on the feet, potential to be a lot of fun, but I went in feeling like at this stage of the game, Steven had to be pretty perfect to beat Shavkat. Shavkat yeah. maybe had a little bit more wiggle room. And to be honest, it wasn't a blowout in the first round. Certainly Steven was still figuring him out. Shavkat, to his credit, I didn't realize how much more physically imposing. I felt like there was a noticeable, you know, strength and size advantage that I think that helped him kind of walk through a little bit of what Steven was trying to set up. I think that he didn't feel like he was on the end of shots trying to figure out how to work his way in. I think he felt like, all right, you know, watch that oblique kick and let's just keep trying to get to Steven. And it worked. And in the second round, when Shavkat got the fight to the ground, more or less that's all she wrote. Just kind of broke him down a little bit systematically until he took the win. Got the submission. You know, Shavkat is kind of that guy right now. I think that, I think there was a very big missed opportunity, Shavkat and Khamzat, before Khamzat moved up, that we didn't get. But
just the rhyming alone would have been worth it. Yeah,
isn't it? I completely agree. But if I'm being honest, I think that had Khamzat not been at welterweight, we would have been talking about Shavkat a lot faster, because he's just really, you know, everything Lorisenko hypes up, you know, undefeated, 17-0, 100% finish rate. Everyone he's stepped in there with, he's gotten out of there. Judges don't work when he does. He's on a special run, too. What about you?
Yeah, look, Wonderboy has always been one of my favorite fighters. He's not quite the elite striker that he was just a few years ago, but he's still in there, the most positive man on earth. And he still looked good, just not as good. And for Shavkat, it was almost easy work, which is disappointing to see against Wonderboy. His takedown, Wonderboy's takedown defense was still strong, but not as good. And, you know, just when you're fighting someone on the rise, even someone as, like Shavkat, even someone as good as Stephen Wonderboy, you know, Mother Nature and all that stuff just starts to chip away. So there's a little bit of a decline, and it made Shavkat's win more impressive, because not only did he beat Wonderboy, but he submitted him, which is something no one's ever done. So a great moment for Shavkat, who then, I think, didn't he say he was injured? He had like a bad ankle injury, which just kind of makes it worse.
Oh my God, yeah. It just kind of makes it a little more epic, no?
It stings a little more. It's like, did you have to say that? But okay. So I don't know what this means for Wonderboy. Again, still looks good, but it's kind of like when you're on the same card as someone like Tony Ferguson, who's obviously pushing it to the limit there, way past the limit, some might say. As Wonder Boy, you have to ask yourself, you know, am I just going to keep, you know, is there a place for him in the UFC where he can still win fights? And I don't think the UFC is a place for him anymore to still win fights, because he's going to be put in that gatekeeper status. And, you know, there's no Legends League in the UFC, but I don't know where his contract is. I'm just thinking PFL might be a good spot for him, especially with, you know, the belt acquisition and all that. But in any case, Shavkat looks awesome. And, you know, the thing that's impressive about him, apart from his skills, is his physique. If you see the guy walking down the street with his shirt off, you would never guess what he could do to you in the cage, in a gym. He just looks very unassuming, and that's pretty cool.
Those are the scariest guys. Let's be real.
Freaking scariest guys, man. Scariest.
Like Fedor, guy. Shoot. Fedor. That sweater.
And yeah,
you
the
knew
sweater.
What he did to people in Japan, dude.
Yeah, even Robbie Lawler, like, his physique is, he's muscular, but, like, you know, he kind of just looks like a bald dude walking around. But if you look closer in his eyes, it's like, oh, okay, never mind.
Fair he's enough, fair enough. You know what? I think we're in a wait and see. I would not be surprised if they try to push Shavkat for Belal, title eliminator. That would be unfair to Belal, let me make that clear right now. But when I look at the scenario, it's like it's kind of like title shot or step back, it feels like, for Shavkat. And I know that Steven wasn't necessarily the highest ranked guy. But when I think about the hype that there is for him, I don't know that, like, another, like, maybe fighting Vicente Luque, but then you have the Killcliff connection again. Obviously, Ian Garry, Jeff Neal fighting, and Shavkat fights the winner, but what's the timetable for Ian and Jeff? Also, Shavkat just beat Jeff, so you're more waiting on Ian. There's a lot of little things to figure out with Shavkat, so time will tell. But for right now, it's just kind of like wait and see, because I don't know that there's that obvious guy for Shavkat right now. And that's just really all there is to it, right? So
yeah,
that's where I stand with them for that. Look, as we made our way down the card, Paddy Pimblett, Tony Ferguson. I don't think Tony looked horrible. He showed more fight in there than he did against Charles. Charles, for example, it felt like a bit of a shutout, things like that. One thing I will say, Paddy's improvements and his youthfulness and his power just overpowered this version of Tony Ferguson. Tony was trying, but he just really, you know, Paddy just had answers for everything, you know, stood with him on the feet, getting him down. Tony really wasn't able to get close to some submissions. And 15 minutes, braided Paddy, got it done. You know what I mean?
Braided, yeah, man. Braided Paddy was a surprise for sure. He looked muscular, more muscular than I've seen him in the past. His striking looked improved. Still a little bit of a winger. You know, he still has that old school winging punches style of fighting. And yeah, Tony Ferguson did not look terrible, just doesn't have any more pop in his punches and not able to evade even Pimblett's winging punches. So, you know, it wasn't a total beatdown. Yeah, you're right. There's been worse beatdowns against Tony Ferguson. This wasn't it. I really, really wanted it to be this amazing Rocky story where he spent time with Goggins and then he came back and he beat this. You know, he derailed the hype train with Paddy Pimblett, but didn't happen. So Tony Ferguson seems to me, I'm a stubborn person. My son is stubborn. My husband is stubborn. I know a lot of stubborn people. He seems like the most stubborn man on the planet. And if you tell him to retire, then he will not retire just to spite you. And it feels like he will never retire because that's what everyone thinks he should do. And Dana White's publicly saying he should retire. You know, it wasn't like the worst beatdown I've seen him get was Gaethje, right? That's the one where he short-circuited and he's never been the same since. And didn't retire after that. So losing to Pimblett in a sort of whatever, you know, mediocre fashion is not going to get Tony Ferguson to retire. But I wonder if UFC will keep matching him up. You know, what's their responsibility in this situation? Do they keep matching him up? Do they try to do more generous matchmaking if they are going to keep matching him up? Or do they tell him, you're done, we're not going to book you anymore? What do you think they would do?
You know what? I think there's something to be said for just at a certain point, it's like, hey, like I'm trying to think like Anthony Pettis. Like Anthony Pettis is like, hey, you know, like, we're okay if business is done. If you want to go, you know, cash in somewhere else, we'll do it. But in terms of here, we've look, at a certain point in UFC, this is one of the things that people sometimes, you know, there's friction. It causes friction. Getting that, oh my God, what's the phrase? I don't use it a lot, but just like squeeze all the juice out of the berry kind of deal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there is a little bit of, you know, sometimes when someone's on the decline, well, you know what? This is matchmaking. This is how men and women get built up. When one gets older, one is younger. You know, it's like, well, can you take on an established name at a time when the name isn't necessarily headlining big pay-per-views anymore? I think that it is fair to say that as a business, and I don't want to say this personal, as a business, there's maybe that feeling that you've squeezed all the juice you're going to get out of Tony in terms of building up contenders. Think about it. He built up Charles. He built up Beneil. He built up Patty now. Bobby Green as well. I think that if Tony wants to keep fighting, UFC would be like, you know, you're always going to be that guy to us. We can't keep giving you fights. I think it would just be, you know, look, 7 losses in a row. I'm not going to say any more about that. I personally feel like, you know, if there is an exhibition, kind of like a boxing deal kind of thing for Tony out there, I wouldn't hate it. But I think if we're talking about guys out there trying to be the best MMA fighters, I don't know that that's still the best thing for Tony. I think a veterans fight somewhere else would be fine. If you wanted to do a little bit of the boxing thing and find a spot out there somewhere, maybe would be okay against maybe like another MMA fighter or something to that effect. But in terms of like, for example, UFC or PFL, those guys are still on a roll and young and hungry and trying to be the Tony Ferguson of today's era. I don't know that he's it's fair to put him in there with those guys anymore. And look, I want to go on the record here on our show. Not every, you know, Hall of Fame career is about how much gold did you have and all these numbers and what you put up and what notes in the history book are yours. Sometimes it's about how did you make that audience feel when you went out there and they got to watch you. And there are easily millions of fans who, when Tony Ferguson went out there, edge of your seat, stand up and cheer, just in awe of the grit and the kind of performances he used to put on. He's that guy that made a fan out of a lot of people who weren't fans before. That's a Hall of Fame career. And Tony Ferguson has had that. I mean, look at how ride or die the people have been with him when he's 0-7 since 2020. I mean, I don't know that there's many fighters. Maybe I don't know that I could count on. I need more than one hand to count the amount of fighters who generate that kind of love. If they went on a 7-fight skid right now, that fans would still be, I just want to see him win. Come on, keep going.
Yeah, Cerrone's the only person I think I can think of, but yeah.
Like I said, very few. Robbie Lawler.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a crowded room. That's the career that Tony Ferguson has had. And I'm not going to leave it at that. Or I'm not going to add more to that. I mean, it's just, I don't think it's fair to expect him to get like another UFC fight. Just with the roster that the UFC tries to build, it's not built to help out a guy like Tony. You're trying to find the next big thing and let the cream rise to the top.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you have a good matchup for Tony that isn't just a blatant, like, toss up, get a guy freaking off the regional scene just to give him a win. You know what I mean?
Bring CM Punk back like that.
Yeah, you know? That kind of deal. That's unfair to me.
Yeah, it is, because it's like just a hand-me-down, a gimme, and like that's the last person that would want that for sure. Yeah, man, it's a tough spot. You know, BJ Penn, Cerrone, you felt less bad for him. It was, you know, I think BJ Penn was the one that everyone's comparing Ferguson to, and you know, people say, oh, the new fans are only going to know this version. Well, not, if you're a fan, you're always going to be looking backwards. And if you're a fan and someone tells you, man, you should have seen this person in their heyday, you're going to go back and you're going to watch footage. And so it doesn't sully his legacy one bit. And let's not forget, like Cerrone, the fights that he lost, those last six, I'm going to exclude Pimblett because he's not a great yet, were the top of the top. You know, so it's like anyone in the top five has probably or could lose to any of those guys that Cerrone and Ferguson lost to. And like, who's been more game than Cerrone and Ferguson in the lightweight division? So, you know, not writing the eulogy, just want the best for the guy. That's all.
Fair enough. I mean, in terms of Patty, wait and see. I feel like there's a good matchup for him out there. I feel like Bobby Green right now makes a lot of sense, but I also understand that, like, it's a tough thing because stylistically you feel like Patty is still in his developmental phase of his skills, even though he's been a Cage Warriors champion. But then on the flip side of that, yeah, I do think there's something to be said for the, you know, you're on a roll, you have the hype. You know, there comes a time where you got to start taking these fights, right? I feel like, who was it? I just think he's one of those guys. It's kind of like you're too big for us to keep giving you no names.
Right,
you're still developing, that it's not like we could give you a top 10 guy and let's keep it rolling.
Yeah.
That being said, he improved so much since his last outing. I thought he looked noticeably so much better. I think that's a great sign if you're looking to see how far Patty Pimblett can take it. You know what I mean?
Totally, man. You're totally right.
So wait and see. Bobby stands out to me, a couple other people, but I think wait and see who's available. You know, I wouldn't say like, oh, he's Rafael Fiziev's return fight, things like that. I don't think he's there yet.
No,
but certainly let's wait for the right matchup to present itself in first half 24. So there we go.
Yep.
Josh Emmett, I gotta say, that's the most violent knockout I've seen in a long time that he landed on Bryce Mitchell.
Bryce Mitchell, yeah.
Another man with a great head of thick hair. you know what? What more can I say? Bryce Mitchell, short notice, never really got to show the grappling. Josh Emmett, I think that there was this slight feeling of, okay, is he, you know, a veteran now and kind of, you know, is he starting to miss a step, you know, lost to Yair, lost to Ilya. That dude is still dangerous every night out, obviously. And he showed that on Bryce. The whole thing with the shaking and all that, I mean, I got to say that in terms of a broadcast, outside of like the many, you know, shins and knuckles to the chin that put guys out, that felt like a top five, like, give me chills moment that I've ever seen on a UFC broadcast, showing Bryce shake like that. I was a little like, you know what, as real as it gets, it feels like we had to be reminded, nah, this is not you. We play basketball. You don't play MMA. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it was, I mean, he was having a convulsion. And it was like, you know, DC's like, oh my God, his legs are shaking. And it's like, you know, they're reacting like you might at home. But it's like very terrifying to see that happening in the cage. You know, the knockout, when they get knocked out stiff and they're in that frozen position, that's scary. When they don't wake up for a long time, that's scary. Convulsions, that's like next level, you know? Manny Pacquiao against Marquez. This is like, you know, you want to hear the, you know, the sad music they play in the NFL when someone gets hurt, the piano music. It's like, da-na-na, 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 da-na-na. I don't know if you watch football.
Yes, I know it. The Fox
theme. Right? That's like the UFC needs like a sad song to like play them out when someone gets hurt, because that was bad, man. So seeing him stand up and not being able to really support himself, like, it was, I'm not saying a lack of professionalism, because DC and Joe Rogan are beloved for their honesty, their just genuine reactions to watching fights. However, it was a little bit like, you're not in your living room, guys. Like, a little more decorum, please. You know, not knocking it, but just something to keep in mind that this is a really serious thing that's just happened. So the sound that that punch made, the obviously the physical reaction Bryce Mitchell had, Emmett knew what was up. He was in the kneeled position waiting to see how Bryce was going to come out of it. Like, it was scary, man. Totally scary. And the worst part is that Bryce was coming into it. You know, when you're going into a punch, it's way worse than if you're just standing there. I will say this, though. You know, Bryce Mitchell, short notice. So no one's going to take anything away from him. It was short notice. He got caught. That's it. But for Josh Emmett, like, you know, he's there with that amazing knockout power. And he's shouting, I'm back, I'm back. The thing is, he looked really bad against Yuri Rodriguez, who's a very well-rounded MMA fighter. Josh Emmett is not that. I personally wouldn't describe him as a very well-rounded MMA fighter. He has a lot of skills. He can do everything, but his main thing is that heavy hand, that knockout power. And that can only take you so far. So we'll see what they match him up with next. But I don't think this is an indicator of him being, like, ready for the belt or something.
Fair. Okay, I get what you're saying. I just realized I've probably said fair enough after every one of your points. You know what? I would agree. I think that he now has to find the right matchup. I know he said he felt like he'd maybe, you know, was continuing his stride past Giga Chikadze. I would respectfully disagree. I think that just when I look at the landscape, I feel like, if you're going to go with someone for Emmett who's not Giga, the only people who make sense are someone like an Aljamain Sterling moving up to 45, a Max Holloway. And yet it's just kind of like, well, what do you want for those other two guys? Like, is Aljo, like, for Aljo, who would you want if he's moving up to featherweight? And Max, to be real, Max can fight whoever he wants. I still think that Max and Giga would have been a great fight. I still think that Max Holloway has earned the right to say, like, hey, you know, like, give me the, you know, let me essentially sweep the board of everybody who isn't Volkanovski. So I think it's about, you know, what makes the most sense. Do you just pair up Aljo and Max for each other, you know, the two former champs? Josh Emmett would still be a decent fight for both of those guys, but I don't know that that's what makes the most sense. So I think wait and see, but someone is the odd man out in this triangle of, or actually, I guess, you know, how do you pair them up? Four pieces, Giga, Josh, Max, Aljo. And some combination of how all those pieces fit. I'll leave it at that. Obviously it was quite the card. Before we move on, Irene Aldana, Carol Hossa. That was, you know what, female fight of the year. If I agree with all of the praise that it got, well deserved, just bonus, well deserved everything. Irene, I think, really delivered the kind of performance she really needed. Carol kind of showed she's up there and where she's at in terms of the pecking order of the division and what she could bring to the table. If there's one thing I would point out is that Carol is obviously not Amanda Nunes, so a victory like that, it's not like, oh, well, you know, she obviously, you know, apples to oranges.
Right, right.
But Irene, exciting contender. I think at a time when the bantamweight division is looking for someone fresh, and, you know, how do we transition post-Amanda, now we are post-Ronda, I think that that's very telling. I think that you know, when I look at it, you got Raquel and Myra. Irene against the winner, either of those, I like it. Irene against Juliana Pena, like it. So she had the exact kind of performance you need to get yourself back to a title shot in a fight or two, if not straight up. So I think good sign for Irene. Great battle for both women. I look forward to seeing them back. What about you?
Yeah, man, that was a killer, killer matchup. Killer fight. I was very surprised at the beginning of round one, or the entirety of round one, I should say. Irene lost that round, man. Like, she was getting her leg kicked over and over again. And even on the striking side, wasn't having a lot of success. The adjustment that she made to just move a little bit closer made all the difference in rounds two and three. That being said, Hossa was still giving it to her, man. Like, it was a legit back and forth. It was kind of like, you know, you're facing a problem. You've gone so deep into it that you can't back out of it now. So you're just going to keep pushing forward till you come out the other end. And that's kind of how this felt. It was like, all right, well, you punched me, I got to punch you back. And well, now I punched you, you got to punch me back. And they were just beating the heck out of each other. It was a killer fight, man. Hearing Irene on the mic afterwards saying, you know, she already had a busted knee, training to swallow the pain. Like, that's just some tough stuff right there, man. Really impressed with her performance. However, you know, it was a back and forth. There was no lopsidedness here. And so I think what DC and Rogan were saying about checking the leg kicks, definitely something that Irene has to work on. And just in general, making stance adjustments. Like, I know not everyone is a stance switcher, but she's got to work on her foot positioning when she's getting beat up like that, because she can't just hold that wide stance the whole fight. Someone else is going to come out and capitalize on that in a more effective way, in a more long-term way throughout the fight. She got a little bit lucky here that she was able to make the minor adjustment and push Rosa back the way she did.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree with that assessment. I think that it's one of those little things, and not to say that a fight is supposed to be easy, but when you're talking about, you know, you want to win a belt and keep it at the highest level, you know, a lot of those little things do just need a little bit of tightening up. That being said, I completely believe in Irene's ability to get to that point. I mean, you look at the growth that she's made in her game, obviously her team, you look at the growth of Alexa Grasso over the years. I think there's nothing to say that Irene can't get to that point as well in her skills. So yeah, I just think that it was a good fight. I think that there's a lot to grow from and use. One of the things that really helps is that nothing's really going on for a while now. The champs don't fight for a month, or the champ doesn't fight for a month with the vacant title, then recovery. So there's a lot of time between now and whenever the title could be up for grabs to recover and work and do all those things. So I think it's great for spot to be in if you're Irene Aldana.
Yeah, for sure.
Look, it was obviously a wild night, you know, earlier in the night, and you got guys like Menafield doing well and everyone else. So it's just like, it just kept building. Cody Garbrandt, you know, doing good.
He looked good, man. He looked good. Physically, yeah. He looked good. He looked beefy. Yeah.
Yeah, Ariane Lipsky had a great performance too over Casey O'Neill. So it just kept getting better. What else can I say? The night just kept getting better. The title fights, I will say, you know, five rounders slowed down. To be honest, I felt like there was just, like we talk about the PFL card, the UFC card had a great, you know, like you got a lot of action and you got a decent length of MMA for the broadcast. So I don't hate on it at all. Could we have had probably a more exciting main event? Absolutely. But you know this going in. Sometimes it's the, you know, Zhang Wei Li, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And, you know, sometimes it's just freaking, you know, Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo, 16 seconds, and that's it. They don't give you another fight just because the main event ended quickly. That's you sign up for when you go in. So that's how I feel about all of it. I thought it was a great night of fights overall. So you can't really hate on that. Could have done a exclamation point at the end, but it's fine. It was a really good card, so I liked it. Final event of the year. I'm going to give us some time to reflect on that. At the end of the show, there was some stuff that happened. I got to say, I felt like the Ian Garry of it all was a little bit of a lost thing from about Wednesday to Saturday. I thought that he was going to be the glue at the press conference. Everyone was expected to kind of, you know, take turns and shots with him. I don't want to say at him because he knew he was going to be bringing it. Has to pull out due to the pneumonia. I guess, yeah. Did you feel like that was a very big thing that was lost on Saturday, not having Ian Garry?
You know, on paper, yes. But once you got to the fight, it was like, I forgot. You know, there was a lot of talk about it leading up. But then it's like, okay, pneumonia, he pulled out. And then other stories just took over. The Colby, Leon dad thing. Like, you know, the Ian Garry thing just got lost in the shuffle. So ultimately didn't miss it, no.
I would argue yes. For the simple fact that I think that the plans just kind of fell apart. Because I think that going into Saturday, the plan would have been the winner of Ian and Luque fights the winner of Shavkat Wonderboy. And everything, all the storylines, all the pieces just make sense. If you're Luque and you run it back with Steven. If you're Luque and you've had this resurgence and now you're taking on a, you know, now you're the proven guy fighting Shavkat, works. Ian Garry, undefeated prospect and just the hype that would have gone in against Wonderboy. Or the noise he would have made against Shavkat. It just worked. Now Shavkat doesn't have a dance partner, and Luque is kind of left as the odd man out, because that leads to my next thing. By the way, just the whole, it just, you know, I just feel like now we have, before I talk about the matchups, unresolved. Because I feel like we kind of were setting up for Ian, either put up or shut up, all the comments that were made from, you know, all of his, you know, his peers, from a Sean Strickland, the fans, you know, we now didn't get to see him kind of like, you know, shut everybody up or everything else. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we will get that in March, but there's something to be said for how much the head of steam he had going into Saturday. So that is a little missed. Dana White with the, I gotta say, he decided it was Christmas early. Drops a lot of major announcements. I just, where did I have it? I had the graphic pulled up.
He drops it like nothing.
Oh, yeah. All right, look, we know Sean O'Malley, Chito Vera rematch on March 9th, Miami. Announces Gilbert Burns versus Jack Della Maddalena. Peter Yan taking on Song Yadong. Ian Garry will take on Jeff Neal. And then not for nothing, the signing of Michael Venom Page, he has taken on Kevin Holland. What are your thoughts?
The way he said that, even, I think it was John Morgan, he sounded different. Maybe he was sick. But whoever was talking first was like, you're just going to drop
it like that.
Yeah, like that. You're not going to say, like, we signed him, guess what? But, you know, I'm very surprised by MVP being signed by UFC. I know it was, you know, in talks, but I just think about his age, his very unique style that is, you know, not so far away from Wonderboy. I think Wonderboy is more effective with that karate style. He can do more than MVP can, even though I love MVP. I don't know how he's going to do in the UFC. So I was really surprised by them wanting to sign him. I wonder if the nature of the contract is, you know, very short term or what it is. But great for him to make it to the UFC and to be able to test himself. Kevin Holland's a tough matchup. Yeah, that's going to be very, very interesting. So great, great matchmaking there. Ian Garry, Jeff Neal, like, why do you think they didn't rebook with Vicente? Do you think Vicente wanted to fight sooner? He didn't want to wait till March? Because that doesn't really make sense.
I asked Dana. He said that Luque turned down several fights.
Okay.
I'm assuming. And then I also asked, you know, Dana also said, yeah, including Ian Garry.
Huh.
I asked, it's like, was there an attempt to rebook it? And Dana said, Luque we offered Luque several. He turned them down.
Okay.
I don't know if it's like, you know, look, Luque was also trying to cut weight. They did make it to Wednesday, and he's trying to make 170. So I don't know if it's, you know, give me an extra month or two before I do that to my body. Holidays, I don't know. But, yeah, that's what I heard. That's what, yeah, or that's what he told us.
You're right, holidays. He's probably like, man, I can't cut back down in March after the holidays. So Jeff Neal, I wasn't aware of the background here, the Ian Gary and the putting a mugshot of it, Jeff Neal on a t-shirt.
Well, you'll remember that in September, Ian was supposed to fight Jeff, but Jeff pulled out a couple weeks before the fight. That's how we ended up with Neil Magny.
Right, right.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, Jeff, okay, so Ian, one, I will say this, I prefer this much more to Vicente Luque. In terms of logistics, it doesn't do for Ian's career what Luque would have in the moment. That being said, I think that the hype and the interest, particularly, I'm looking at the breakdown of the card. I mean, Ian, I don't think he, Ian is like the paper, not the pay-per-view, he's the prelim headliner on the current rundown that I have. It's unofficial, right. But it's like, you know, if you're putting Kevin Holland on the pay-per-view, you're putting Song and Pewter on the pay-per-view, Gilbert Burns, Jack Della. I mean, you know, that's a very interesting fight. That gets fans in the arena early.
Yeah.
Just the bad blood. Jeff absolutely wants to put Ian into the stands after the whole mugshot thing. Obviously, Ian is Ian. The fact that they have both trained, well, at least Ian, I forget. I don't think Jeff has, sorry. But Ian used to train in Florida. I mean, put all this together and it makes for quite the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, it really does. And that is a smart move to open up the attendance early, like to bring it in early, you know, and in the seats and on the TV. Yeah.
I mean, this whole card, Gamrot versus RDA. Kaylin Chookagian against Macy Barber, who, to be real, I think she's like the third girl behind Aaron and Manon at this current moment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really good card on paper. It's like, it's hard to match up people better, in my opinion, for a fight night, for a pay-per-view. So I'm excited. You know, March is my month. Y'all know that. So I like it in that way. It makes me wonder, what the heck are you going to do for 300 if 299 is that good?
Yeah, so, seriously.
I mean, I'm a little like, bruh, it's going to, they're going to pop off. It just, they got to. Talking about Michael Venom Page, you know what? Let's say he signed like a 3 or 4 fight deal. You can find 4 strikers to put MVP with if he doesn't fight a wrestler. If I'm assuming MVP is going to say I'm here to win it all. I think I don't want to entertain those conversations. I just want you to fight strikers. And that's the one knock on it. We've had several chances to see MVP grapple. It hasn't worked well.
Nope.
Kevin is great, although I will say Kevin can grapple. Wonder Boy would be fantastic. Ian Gary wouldn't be a bad choice. I don't know. Who's another banger? Ponzinibbio.
Yeah.
Throw with Ponzinibbio. Who else? There's guys who are happy to stand with MVP. If you're giving him 4 of those guys back to back to back, I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I think giving him the UFC platform, I'm here for it. I saw this. Oh, why was everybody trashing MVP versus, I'll say it respectfully, because now MVP is on a platform and fighting guys that casual fans know. I'll say it. How many of MVP's former opponents can you name that weren't Douglas Lima?
Yeah, the guy that that was married to Cyborg. What's his name? Cyborg. That's the only other one.
Think about the way you just had to describe that.
Exactly.
Exactly. Now it's like, do I have to tell you who Kevin Holland is?
Nope.
Exactly. This is why there's more hype for MVP in UFC. That's just how it is. Michael Chandler benefited from a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. So I think there is a lot of reason to enjoy that. To the credit, if I'm being honest, outside of the pay-per-view model, I don't know that I would have wanted, you know, wanted to see MVP in PFL either. I'm sure he had those talks, but you got to imagine maybe he was more to UFC in this moment than PFL after all their signings was. I wouldn't be surprised if it came down to a bit of dollars there and just maybe MVP had more opportunities in UFC. You know, I think you think we don't know how many pay-per-views we're going to get. Right now, we only know there's two. I didn't want to go to fight on the Bellator cards if I was in PFL and it was, yeah. I want to fight more often than two times. So I think UFC probably made that right fit. You think about the platform. I imagine a guy like MVP probably negotiated for his money to grow. If the more the better he does, wins and losses. So I think all that probably is what went on with negotiations for MVP. In my opinion, that's just me.
No, I agree. I agree with you because that makes sense. And if they do this, you know, really strategic matchmaking, yeah, you're right, man. We're going to see some killer fights. Is his goal to win the UFC belt? He's not going to deny
he's
it.
He's going to say that, yeah.
Right, exactly. He's not going to deny it. However, I feel like the goal between MVP and the UFC more higher than him winning a belt is to just put on killer fights. And that has to do with the matchmaking you're talking about. Give him someone he can strike with, not someone that's going to hold him against the cage for, you know, three rounds, five rounds. I hope we see that.
No, I think that that's exactly it. Matchmaking. That's just what I want for MVP.
Yep.
Looking at that card, obviously huge jump up for Jack Della Maddalena. Jelton and Curtis, that huge title implications. I think that lines up. For Jelton, more so, lines him up right there to take on a guy like Tom Aspinall. You're neck and neck there with Cyril Gane now. Peter and Song, I mean, I would argue that Song is on a much bigger upswing and Peter's on the downswing, but name value, style, don't hate it. Obviously, we just talked about Kevin and MVP, Jeff and Ian.
Yeah.
Gamrot and RDA. That's just a stylistically good fight.
I'm surprised RDA is still getting after it, man. Good for him.
What do you mean surprised? Let the man live, you know?
Let the man live, of course. I just look, he's never put on a performance that's made us have the Tony Ferguson conversation. I just feel like he's already done enough, you know. What, doesn't he want to retire? But no, I guess he's still getting after it. So good,
man,
for him.
Some guys, it's like, man, if the car is still running good at 50, I'm going to just keep driving, you know?
Yeah, right.
That's all it is. Kaitlyn Chookagian, Macy Barber. The one thing about it, perfect fight is good. Kaitlyn on the comeback, big name, established veteran. Macy on the special run she's on. If there's one thing, the only tough thing about it is that, like, that flyweight division is so gridlocked. I'll say it again. I don't know that I want to see Valentina and Alexa wait until September. Because if that's the case, what are you doing with Aaron, Manone, and Macy potentially till September? I mean, are they just going to fight once and wait? If you're Macy, like, you can't really move your way up. Or Kaitlyn, you can't. Aaron and Manon are just going to fight each other, and it's like, so are they just going to take 8 months off and then fight each other to try to line up? It's just the women's flyweight with the title now, it's very tricky, and the only thing I really want to know is if they're really waiting for September or if they'll try to do around Cinco de Mayo, Alexa Valentina, which is what I really hope.
They're really going to do a third one? That's like for sure.
Yeah. Unless Dana changes his mind, but yeah, we haven't been given an indication he feels otherwise.
I mean, there's obviously a great market for that fight. Like, yeah, the both of them and a Mexican-related event, you know, right? The Noche UFC, Mexican Independence Day, Cinco de Mayo, any of those? Very big numbers, but yeah, man, it seems kind of hard to hold up the division for so long.
It's just, where's their recovery, you know?
Yeah. Like,
I guess ideally, like you think about it from the fight, and look, I don't remember seeing a cast on Alexa. That doesn't mean it isn't still obviously hurt, and she did photo ops for the MMA awards. But I would imagine, you know, like May, and then come back in September if you need it for Noche, perfect. But if you're gonna, it's just like, I just don't want to see them wait that long just because you want to have the only Mexican champion on Noche UFC.
Right, right.
That's just how I feel. I think that it would just really hamper a lot of that division to wait that long. You could build a good fight card without them. I get it. You want, you know, you want the biggest Mexican talent possible. But it's just the timing just doesn't feel it. Look, you could obviously go back with Moreno and Yair too, and it would be a fun fight night. So all of it just has to come together in that way, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. So, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that's my final thoughts on it. It's just, look, 299 is awesome. UFC 300, I will say this. You know what my dream 300 card is, Natalie? I feel like talking. You go Conor McGregor, preferably Nate Diaz, but Michael Chandler, if you don't screw him over, I don't want to see that either. So just Conor versus Mike or Nate, top of the card. Tom Aspinall, Cyril Gane.
Oh, okay.
Let's throw Khamzat in there in the third from the top. Maybe Costa or, you know, whoever else, but Khamzat. So that's your three pack to anchor the end of the show. Let's get Dustin Poirier a fight. Maybe Beneil, maybe someone else, but Dustin Poirier. And then Aaron Blanchfield, Manon Fiore.
Okay. I like
five
that.
Five pack right there. $80. Take the money. I'll be working, but, you know, someone else.
Yeah, yeah. They'll take my money. I like that, man.
That's how I want it. That's what I feel like. Timing is perfect. Everyone's available. To my knowledge, everyone's healthy. Dana, let's do it.
You think Conor, Nate is a real possibility?
Yeah. For 300, yeah. That being said, assuming people are changing their mind, and I heard this theory that UFC 300 is so big, it, quote, does not need Conor. So they'll be like, well, we could put 300, we'll do gangbusters. And then we could put Conor somebody on 301, and it'll do more gangbusters in 2024. And it's like, I get it, but then I'm like, why can't it all just be in one, you know? So I've heard that theory. That's my dream UFC 300 card. Leon and Islam is a great fight. There's a lot of good fights out there. But if I'm building what's with the pieces, that's how I see it. And that's what I'm into. So I'll go from there.
Yeah, I like it.
But my point of that is, you know, we're now done with the year in 2024. I'll leave you with that. Final thoughts on just everything we've gotten over the last 12 months. By the way, we didn't even talk about it. Jake Paul got a first-round knockout in boxing.
Dude, you know what?
I don't want to say veteran, but, you know, similar number of fights boxer. What do you think?
I was very surprised. I did not pay for this one, you'll be happy to know. I just saw the clip on Twitter. And I was like, this Andre August didn't look very good. He's just standing there. I was like, oh, this guy's, I hadn't been following the opponent, so I didn't know what his background was. I was like, this guy's just some other, you know, random dude. But 10-1 as a professional boxer, that's not nothing. And Jake Paul just flatlined him. So, you know, he made his name by beating, you know, retired MMA wrestlers, but it set him up now so that he can start fighting people that are actually sort of mostly boxers. I do believe he's got a plan and he's working on it, man. He's working his way through that plan, crossing off the items on his list. Did anybody watch it? I don't know, but you know, it's a good knockout for the real.
So that's one of those times I'm going to say it came down to MMA versus boxing audience. Yeah. Jake Paul has done a good job crossing them over. If you're a straight up boxing person who doesn't care for the whole fights in the cage and all that, then you probably kept up with it because it's one of the last few big fights, big names competing. MMA, the MMA world didn't really care.
Right.
Because it's like, and we've talked about this, I think the novelty is worn off. He wasn't fighting the most exciting name. We have so much MMA stuff going on Friday. You have Karate Combat with Pettis and Henderson. LFA is going on. You're setting up for a big week of UFC. Like, more people were catching up on their UFC 296 content probably than tuning in for Jake Paul boxing.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you just cared about the one fight. You know what I mean? So that's, I think that just happened. A fantastic win. For sure. Yeah. If it's about moving up in boxing, does that. So, I mean, 12 months of that, Jake Paul, MMA, crossover boxing. What do you think of everything we've gotten?
Listen, you know, has Jake Paul made a significant impact in the combat sports world? Most definitely, man. Not only has he busted through and made a name for himself, but by doing it in his way and only his way, he's also helped some MMA fighters make a lot of money. And you know, it's sort of like the continuation of the Conor McGregor effect, right? Which is getting out there, being loud, saying stuff, you know, whether people like it or not. But building your name up to such a degree that you can demand a large amount of money for yourself and for your opponent too. And so, I mean, yeah, the guy's done... He's made a big impact on the sport, or he's made a big splash, right? We'll see how this, you know, tracks next year. But didn't expect him to be such a big part of 2023. That being said, UFC has been steadily doing their thing. And then, of course, PFL, Bellator, PFL coming out at the end with the big announcement. So it's been a great, fun year. Lots of awesome, awesome fights. I can't complain, man. Looking forward to 300, that's for sure.
Yeah, when I think about the year, I've said it pretty much all year. It's been, for fighters in particular, probably their best year. I mean, UFC has continued as UFC does, so it wasn't a bad year at UFC. The opportunities for in PFL now, tremendous. I just really, they stole the show. If you ask me, and not to say that like UFC is still obviously king, but it's like you tell me who made the news that made me like, wait, what? This is happening. It was PFL, and they did it several times this year. And I'm sure, you know, there's a very big spend money to make money. But my goodness, if we weren't talking about PFL way more than I think you and I probably ever thought we would this year, they got it done. Now, next year, that's another story, but convert that into viewership and revenue and gate numbers. All that is obviously the next step. But in terms of getting us talking about PFL, mission accomplished. When I think about the crossover and the opportunities, I mean, you know, obviously fighters, you got Nate Diaz and Dylan Danis and the boxing thing and obviously, everybody else who now has opportunities. I'm hearing about Anderson Silva doing the Misfits thing. Anderson and Tyron Woodley was thrown out there. And it's like, you know, in terms of combat sports in general, my goodness, like from MMA to boxing, influencer to elite, UFC and the minor leagues, you know, everything just was popping off. You know, you have Gamebred boxing and Gamebred MMA, and they were doing their thing. And then the Gamebred bare knuckle MMA, and
it's
Junior and Fabricio. And then you have, you know, like I said, Logan Paul, Dylan Danis made noise. And then obviously you have the PFL and the UFC and Bellator. And now obviously the acquisition of Bellator by the PFL. I mean, just an amazing year. I think that it's one of those, 2023 is the year it happened. 2024 is the year of what did they do with it. And I think that obviously there's a lot of PFL talk. Where does the boxing scene go from here with the Jake Pauls of the world? And are there big fights in boxing for a lot of the MMA fighters right now? Francis Ngannou, you know, think about it. Are there more fights like that for guys? That, right? Jeez, yeah. Are there more fights for guys like that? Sure. Maybe not as many as I thought there were going into this year, but I know they're out there. You put it all together, it's been an amazing 2023, and 2024 now is, okay, how do we keep it going? How do we build on this? And yeah, I think that that's just it. It was an amazing year for combat sports, an amazing year for us, and it just made for a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our last show of the year. We will be back in the new year with a, you know, MMA Daily Awards show, and then we'll take a little break and be back as the UFC schedule gets off to the races. Natalie, do you have anything else you'd like to put out there?
I would just like to say thanks to you, Double G, for another great year. And you summed it up very well. UFC, PFL, Francis Ngannou, like lots of names and promotions that were popping. It was a fun year. And I'm looking forward to the next one. And you know, not to forget about the holidays that we have coming up, because that's what I'm looking forward to most right now.
Oh, of course. And of course, Merry Christmas to you and your family. Happy holidays. Thank you. Happy holidays to everyone. Hope you enjoy it. Have a safe one. Be happy. Be merry. And until then, you know, just take care. We'll be back.